Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Debate physics also, but you know, there's just a total void of useful debate whores. Something to debate with. Nobody's kind of capable of it. But anyway, so we're going to do two drafty kind of subjects. Explaining the difference in collisions and key concepts, like when they use the concept like super elastic, what they're really saying, okay, is that the interaction is got storage in it, a spring, a rubber band. It's very different than saying elastic or just saying you have a material that isn't going to deform easily. So inelastic would be the object kind of can be deformed. And they're using the term for being deformed and stretching and giving it back as the same thing. Like me punching a piece of sheetrock where it deforms but it doesn't bounce back. That is, I break it. Piece of wood, I break it. It doesn't bounce back. It doesn't reform into its shape. So they're using the same word, inelastic, to describe very different things in the sense of implying. Like super elastic is like double inelastic. Which doesn't make any sense. So that you're using these terms, these concepts, very poorly. And so, I think it just breaks people's understanding. I mean, you have to understand, when you put a spring in, or you put a rubber band in, you're putting something that's going to conserve the energy in. That's what they do. That's why we like these things, you know, mechanically. That's why they're useful. Is because they don't destroy energy, that is, they don't turn it into heat or some other kind of garbage. They, generally speaking, allow you to place energy in them like a battery and get it right back again. Okay, not right back, that's the whole point. They're delay objects, you could say. Anyway, and so we're basically talking about concepts, okay, where, so this also comes up in the toady kind of conversation. In the sense that there's two kinds of experiments you can do. You can hit a big mass. I guess I'll make this a small mass. Well, I'll make this a big mass. You can hit a big thing into a little thing. Alright, and then you can just go gradually down the scale till you get same size thing into same size thing. And then you go the other way with the scale and you can bang small thing into big thing. Right, and it has to be understood that these are really different. So although relativity theory implies that somehow all movement is some sort of not real thing, that is, there's nothing that really has a velocity in this circumstance, these are just somehow some sort of relative stuff. The fact is that it's absolute, and you can sort of find out it's absolute because this will not act like this, okay? The opposite is not reciprocal. And, you know, therefore indicating that something really does have to carry the energy. That there's a truth when these two things hit each other, that it's not, you can just make up this idea that, okay, this one's going 30 miles an hour into that one, or this one's going 30 miles an hour into that one, and you have the same reaction. But you only have the same reaction when they're equal masses, and that's it. So when they're not equal masses, you can't play these little games with, well, I'll make this one go 15 miles an hour and this one go 15 miles an hour, or all of that stuff. There's an actual fact that one of them actually has the energy. Just like if you're going to have two twins in the Einstein paradox that are going to somehow age differently, one of them actually has to move slower than the other. I mean, an actual movement, you know. Anyway, all right, so what would be argued is that when you have these different interactions, what's going to happen is the big thing hits little thing, they're both going to keep going this way, okay? And when little thing hits big thing, you're going to have a different scenario in the sense that the big thing's going to go this way and the little thing's going to go this way. So that's an obvious change you can see. And what you're really talking about when you inject springs, okay, or rubber bands or whatever, what you're really injecting in here is you're changing the threshold at which that happens. So just like if I was to throw a medicine ball at you, okay, and I made it a little bit bigger and a little bigger, there's a point where you can't resist the force. That is, it's going to knock you over. It's going to tip you over. Because you won't be able to absorb the force evenly enough to keep yourself upright. And there's a tipping point. And I can change that tipping point by giving you a catcher. You know, it's like catching an egg. Somebody throws you an egg and you catch it gracefully. That is, you decelerate it, okay, gracefully, it doesn't break. You decelerate it ungracefully, it breaks. There's a threshold, and I can change that by adding the springs. And that's all the springs. So all the springs are going to do is change at what, you know, mass ratio, you know, we'll just use small m's and big m's maybe, at what mass ratio the spring will cause there to be a reflection. So that's all you're really changing, is from this to this, and you're changing at what point that happens by using a spring. So a spring does nothing to this experiment. All right, classically, I can do a Newton's cradle. I can swing one into the other, equal masses, and all of the velocity will go from one object into the other object. So it's a full transfer of the full portion of the velocity, and obviously they have the same mass. So we know that we get a 100% transfer here. All right, now here, I make this mass, let's say I make this mass four times, I'll just use that as an example, bigger. So the mass is this one mass, and this is 4x the mass. At that point, this object probably doesn't move. And this object, okay, completely reflects with 100%. Now that number might be 8, might be 10, just depends on a lot of circumstances. Okay, but the real point is that in our circumstance, there is gravity. Now, in space, I can't say what the number might be. So in a perfectly frictionless environment, that number might be much higher. So I can't say, oh, that's the draft part here. I can't say at this exact moment, I might speculate, but I can't say at this exact moment when that point is. Okay, I can see that camera needs adjusting. All right, so let's just work with this number. So we have 100% back when the masses are, this is the experiment we are playing with a lot. Let me get rid of this arrow because it's going to get in my way, right? So the tricky one is in between these, you know, 100% rejection, 100% transfer. Then you have the 50-50 thing where you have, you know, a one mass and a two mass, and we get a 50% transfer, right, of the velocity. So now we're talking about, you know, which way the velocity goes. Well, it's not a 50%, so that's not the way I wanted to say it. All right, so I have to say this, I have to be a little bit careful. All right. Because that's not halfway to this number either. The point would be is that the one mass transfers, and what percentage of its, what I wanted to do was just make this bigger and bigger, so I'll just reuse this drawing. So there's a point where I take this mass and I make this one, what would be ideal is if we had the experiment where they go from 10 grams, let's say this is 100 grams, and they go 10 grams, and then they go 20 grams, and then they go 30 grams, and then 40 grams. So maybe I should draw that, and we'll start with that drawing, and just point out how much of the energy is transferred to the second object at what velocity. And this is where it gets to my point that, you know, it's not just about that an object is really transferring its velocity. Is the bucket it's using, okay, to transfer the energy. And so if it's going 20 miles an hour, it can't make this go 40 miles an hour unless I do put a spring here. Okay, it can't make it go any faster than it's going. So what it'll do is it'll hit it, give some portion of its momentum, say, you know, 10% or 15%, and that percentage will be made out of the foundation of that percentage is what's the mass and what's the possible velocity it can go with that much energy how much energy can you transfer? But it can only, if this is going 10 miles an hour, it can't make something go faster. You can't throw a 90 mile an hour fastball without moving your hand 90 miles an hour. You can't throw it 110. You can't throw it faster than you're moving. And likewise, this object can't throw this one faster than it's moving. And it can only do that if there is something that stores the impact energy and then redistributes it and store it. So the storage is another, maybe I'll do that first, I don't know. But let me just fix this diagram and then we'll get to how the storage device actually works, or something close to how it actually works. Alright, should be back. So this might be a better way to draw it. We'll just keep filling in this. Again, this is draft. I'm only bringing this up now because it's right in the middle of what we're talking about in terms of the conversation about these CART experiments and what happens when you're moving objects. So these are all the same masses here, and we're talking about these different relationships, whether you're hitting something smaller or you're hitting something larger. Now the one we know, like again, is you want 100% transfer. You can do that with the equal sized objects. You get a 100% transfer of the energy from one object to the other object. So I don't know exactly how to draw that, but so I won't. I'll just write it. Okay. And then here it's going to be something less than 100%, right? And so you know that it's always, no matter how light this object gets, this object's going to push it. So it's going to transfer its momentum, but there's a point where it just goes with it, all right, in the sense that this is so much more massive than this object. When I make that relationship really extreme, a piece of dust, the dust just sticks and essentially it becomes an inelastic collision. Okay, they combine. And all this has to do is lose the tiny bit of energy required to just push this thing along. And then there's other points where you're starting to get closer to getting to this 100% transfer, right? So that'll happen for, everything from, a seed or something very small that'll just move when this pen hits it. It'll just stick to the pen and they'll both go off. And it's not really sticking, it's just essentially being incorporated as having the same velocity. And there'll only be a tiny degrade in the velocity, so it won't even be noticeable. So it just all moves in this direction. Both objects move in this direction at the same velocity. Well, there's a point where it can't anymore. So like the bowling pin, bowling ball example, the bowling ball has more mass than this object it hits. Well, what it's going to do is it's going to give the velocity it has. It can't give mass, right? So the only way it can transfer its energy is to give the velocity portion of the momentum. But it can only give the same velocity. So it depends on how massive it is, how much velocity it can hold, how much it can take. Because it can't give more velocity. It can only give the velocity it has. So it's 15 miles an hour. It can only give 15 miles an hour. Now, as I've pointed out, as it's giving, it's losing. So there's going to be a point where this object's going, say, 14 miles an hour. And now this object only has 13 because it's giving away its velocity. As it gives this energy, it's giving it velocity. As that's happening, this velocity is going down as this velocity is going up. So as this increases its velocity, this velocity decreases, and there'll be a point where this one's going now faster than this one. And so it'll leave a little faster. Not a lot faster, a little faster. And that's where the springs come in, right? Because if I put a spring in here, okay, it's going to do the same thing, except the spring is now going to store, okay, some of the velocity energy. It's going to move. The elements of the spring are going to acquire the velocity. And then they're going to give it back in the opposite directions to what they stored. Well, they're going to give it in both directions. So then you'll have a point where the spring is going to give back the energy it stored. And it's going to give it a little boost. So now I can increase the velocity because I can put some of the energy in storage. move the object up to this, say this 14 miles an hour, now this is 13 miles an hour, and then the spring, as they're separating, the spring will give this another 1 mile an hour or something, so it can go up to 15. So this could actually leave a little faster if I have a spring in between. And that way I can take even more energy from this, because compressing the spring, we argued, okay, that's going to require dropping that to 12 or something. So I can put a little bit more, then I can put more velocity in and therefore exchange more momentum. But it doesn't change the basic principle that for this to go fast, this has to go slow, okay? This is taking velocity, this is losing velocity. There's no equal and opposite reaction. There's no opposite force. There's just the fact that when you give your money away, you know, dollar bills, you're getting poorer. And the rate at which you can give dollar bills away declines, you could argue. That they're all like slots, and you're running through the slots, right? You have 100 slots here. And you start off with a dollar bill in each slot. Well, as you start giving dollar bills away, it gets harder and harder because you're pushing empty slots, slots that don't have dollars in them anymore. You can't give away something you don't have. So anyway, it's one way of looking at it. All right, this really does get into how fast. So I'll get into a more exact drawing of springs and rubber bands. But okay, let's just finish this up first. All right, So you're going from a point where you can only transfer a limited amount of velocity to the object, right? It has to be something, it has to decline as you're moving a larger object. The amount of velocity you can give it is declining, okay, as it gets bigger. All right, how to say that? I mean, obviously, when you're 50-50, then you can give exactly your velocity, but exactly the same amount of mass that's taking it. So you can transfer the whole $100 bill, or however you want to look at it, because they have a wallet that holds $100 bills. And what you're saying that the velocity is a certain size, and you're trying to transfer it to another object, and if the object isn't big enough, you have to cut off some of the money, and it has to stay back here. You know, it's that kind of thing. All right, so there is this collision, okay, that they do with the air cart, where they do the opposite one to Professor Lewin. So instead of the one mass, and you have the two mass, instead you push the two mass into the one mass. So, and then this would be, we could call this one that inverse, right? This would be the one mass, and this would be the two mass here. So it's like you're looking at these two experiments. And those are the ones they classically do, okay, because of a relationship they're going to have to it being one-third and two-thirds. And so the transfers, and it ends up that you can have both kinetic energy and momentum appear to be conserved, when in all these other experiments they won't be. So the classic one is the inelastic collision, okay, where you combine the objects. That is, you crash an object into another object, the two objects stick and move off. Well, if I do that, you know, if I force this one mass to hit another one mass and they stick together, then I'll have a split transfer. And what I'll end up with is an object that starts off with a two velocity. It'll combine into an object. It'll only have a one velocity, and now it'll have a two mass. So it'll be an inverse transfer. Okay, you could say 100% of the energy will be conserved and 100% of the momentum, but you lose 50% of the kinetic energy. So this is the classic one where this is how this all started a couple of years ago with the physics girl experiment, where she says we 100% transfer the momentum and somehow we lost half the energy. Well, you can understand, there's nowhere to lose it. There's no evidence of its loss. There's no fires, there's no horrific, you know, there's tiny losses, a little bit of sound, a little tiny bit of vibration, obviously nothing to account for half the energy. So, right there, that experiment pretty much tells you that, well, kinetic energy can't mean much if you can dispense with half of it and you won't even notice half the energy's gone.
and you could certainly reconvert it back again. So that's the key point, is that all I have to do is collect it with a spring, that is, you know, collect the transfer with a spring between these objects, and I can get them to oscillate. That is, I can essentially put the energy back in the two-mass object, the one-mass object, going twice the velocity, and convert it again back into two masses moving in the same direction. So I can get it to oscillate with one going this way, and then they'll come back and they'll both go that way. And then they'll, you know, and obviously you couldn't have that oscillation if one half of the energy was being lost each time the both of them went off together. So this is sort of the giveaway experiment. Maybe it should be concentrated on more and more. Maybe I should play a bunch of videos of the one mass hitting the one mass. And the fact is that when they're inelastic, they stick to each other. Because when they stick to each other, you know, you're saying half the energy is lost. Kinetic energy is saying. And there's just no evidence of half the energy gone. So the 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour, it has the same energy as the 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour. They're just divisions of the same amount of energy, the same momentum. All right, so this experiment, where you hit the two mass into the one mass, what you're basically saying is whatever the velocity is here, okay, I'm going to start giving it away. It can only hold one mass worth, and I can only give it what I have. So again, this velocity starts to increase, okay, there's a point where now this has lost a substantial part of its velocity. So you start off with this size V. Once you give it away, this one-third of it, all right, this is going to have only two-thirds of a velocity left, and it's not going to be able to dispense any more velocity. So obviously this will just leave with that third of the velocity this way and two-thirds of the velocity staying in the heavier object. Well, whatever, something like that. Yeah. And the same, again, the inverted one, this is the Professor Lewin experiment. So when this hits, okay, I probably need another one in here just because, see, the point is that we really want to see the whole, we want to see, okay, 100, you know, 110, you know, and then 120, and then 30, and then 40, all the way up to 100, and then 100, 10, 20, 30, 40, that whole series. And then if we just see the numbers, then we could just say, I can see whether it's a linear relationship or it's a parabola, or, you know, what kind of relationship there is in terms of how much energy is transferable based on the mass ratios. All right, so anyway, so the Professor Lewin one, you're hitting the one mass into the two mass. Ideally, okay, if you can transfer all of the energy, this would leave at one half the velocity. That would be the best you could do if you transferred 100% of the energy. But there's little expectation you're going to be able to do that. I probably could move this over a little, or I could move this over a little. Okay, something like that. Might be better. Yeah, should have thought of that before. Anyway, all right, and so the likely outcome, though, is that you're not going to be able to transfer 100% of the energy in the object. But this, the reasons why you can't do it here aren't because this can't hold it. You know, this can have the high velocity. This has too much mass to move at that velocity. So you can sort of understand there's no way I can put more velocity into this without putting more energy into it than I started with. I mean, this velocity has to be half because there's twice as much mass. So it always has to be less than half the velocity. Now, the trick is that if I go the step in between here, this is what's missing. I need this step in between here. All right, because that's the one where you're going to show that, yes, you can give more. All right, you can give 3/4 of your two-thirds of your velocity, okay, to the other object if you're in here. So here, 2/3 is possible, okay, because the relationship between your masses is not halved. It's more like this has 1.5 masses and this has 2. Then the amount of energy this one can transfer, what the velocity represents is not a relationship between half masses. It's a different relationship to the velocity. So you can have 2/3 of the velocity here, okay, going forward. So, and you can have a tiny bit of the energy still left here. But the point is most of the energy is transferred. In both of these circumstances, most of the energy goes this way. All right, and just how much of that transfer is at what velocity? And obviously, if the mass is smaller, okay, bigger than half, but I mean bigger than the same, but smaller than twice, then you can have some kind of 2/3 of the velocity number. So again, this would be the key thing to have a whole bunch of these experiments where you just make this a little tiny bit heavier, then you make it a little bit heavier, a little bit heavier, and you can just see whatever this line looks like in terms of how it changes how much energy is transferred. All right, and then you get to this end circumstance where there's a point where this mass is so heavy, okay, that, you know, it's such a big mass here that this mass will just bounce back with all of its energy because none of the atoms here can actually move, okay, they won't transfer. So that's the part we'll get to, is how objects move and why they don't move. All right. And that gets to how springs and rubber bands work. All right, back. All right, so again, this is a draft video. I really don't know how, you know, I haven't tried to explain this before, so obviously this is my first attempt at it, and it'll hopefully improve. All right, so let's just say we have a mass, and I can take the shape of the mass and change it. And so I could say that these are two objects of the same mass, and I'm going to hit them with some sort of energy. All right, what science says, and which I don't disagree with, is what they sort of measured with Newton's cradle, is the velocity moves through these objects at the speed of sound inside the object. So if it's going to move, you know, if one end is going to move, I can't just hit a piece of steel at one end and the piece of steel at the other end instantaneously moves. It doesn't instantaneously move, and it doesn't move at all, frankly, unless certain factors are true in terms of what happened when there was an interaction. But the idea, if it's going to move, it has to move at all of it, frankly, or it's just going to deform half of it. So the idea of why does a steel start to compress, you know, you could whack it with a sledgehammer, pounding it into the ground. There's a point where it's moving the steel, and where it doesn't move the steel, well, then the steel has to deform. Doesn't really have much choice. So when you're transferring energy, what's the signal that tells the objects how much energy they can transfer? So the idea is that you hit an object and you apply a pressure. The pressure takes time to get through the object to get to this end to say you have to move. And the point is if there's anything discontinuous in this wave that goes through it, this you know, sending your energy in, then this whole object knows it can't move. So unless this energy keeps being fed, that is, you push, you know, an atom here, it sends the signal, all right, sending a signal to this end. All right, with that first push, and unless there's a second push right behind it, and a third push right behind it, and a fourth push right behind it, unless that happens when you're sending the energy that way, then this side says, okay, all I can do is go out and then back in again. So if this isn't continuous, this end of the steel says, I'll go out, the electrons will go out, and they'll come right back in again. Okay, and so you'll send the energy, you'll just reverse its direction and send the energy back to the other side. And so you're not going to get a transfer in the sense that the energy is still deciding which way it's going, because it couldn't just go, because it wasn't, you know, there wasn't a constant pressure. So unless this can produce a constant pressure to tell it to move, it will reject moving at some point and stop and go back. All right. It's just a really tricky to try to explain this. So the idea is while this is still has a velocity, it has a velocity that's going to be slower than the speed of sound in the materials in most cases. So steel would be like 5,000 meters per second, and for the terrestrial object, the speed of sound is 700 miles an hour, which is, I can't do the conversion. I don't know the conversion. Say this is 5,000 miles an hour. This is only 700 miles an hour. So this is moving faster than the terrestrial speed of sound, and obviously much faster than, say, these objects that we would typically be using, which would be going maybe 50 miles per hour. So it's a lot slower than the speed that the atoms will move inside the object. So that's an advantage to doing the transfers. As long as this is going faster, then this pressure won't overwhelm the object, and it'll be able to move. So if this is going really fast, you can understand that it will start to deform, okay, this surface, because this surface can't transfer the energy. So more and more atoms will be moving here than are moving here, and therefore this will get fatter, it'll deform. The energy will be used deforming the shape of this thing rather than moving the thing, because you've applied the pressure faster then the object can transfer the pressure inside of it. So it has this slow transfer speed of the speed of sound in the object. And that's going to decide whether the object moves or the object is deformed or shatters or in some other way the energy doesn't get through the object fast enough because it's coming in too fast. But if this is going slower than that speed, then you can understand that this is going to create a continuous pressure, and it'll basically just say to these electrons that go out here, keep going out, because I'm going to keep changing where this end is, where the surface is. I'm just going to keep pushing it out further and further so you can keep going. And so this end moves, and the whole thing moves. So at some point, both ends are moving, and the object can then move collectively. But it has to always be collective because all the atoms are stuck to each other. So they're all bound to each other. So if you don't move all of them, you don't move any of them. It's not like you hit this end and 50 atoms fly off the other end. I mean, that some of that happens. it really does. But that's not going to transfer the amount. You have a huge amount of energy. You're not going to transfer it in a few atoms that pop off. All right. So depending on the shape, you can see that you can make an argument that clearly if I change the shape of the object and I change how much time you have to transfer, and so you're more likely to transfer the energy into motion the more compact the object is, so an argument could be made that it would be easier to transfer the energy into an object that has less density in the direction you're pushing, because there's more likelihood that the signals get sent to everybody that we're moving. All right, there's less distance between the origin of the statement we have to move and all of the atoms recognizing, yes, we're moving. I don't know if that's the big point I want to make here, but it's probably not. All right, so the point is with a spring or an elastic band, what you're really doing is you're saying, well, this is very light. Okay, so a spring or an elastic band, you can think of it as a bunch of little, magnets in space, or you could think of it as, let's see what else would work. Well, I don't know, little things that are sticky, but you can move them. They're little tiny masses, absolutely puny little masses, and they're just not very rigidly connected. So you can move these individually. So essentially when you put your object in, with a velocity, you're going to just be moving those little masses as if they were in free space, in a sense. They're loosely connected to each other. So you can move them around. You can push them like little pieces, like if I had magnets that were all north facing, right? And I push them into each other, I can essentially move them into each other with a certain amount of speed, and they won't know that you've done that, and then they'll push back. And it's the same idea here. I'm just pushing one little tiny mass, And it's not until it starts moving into the other magnets that it starts getting resistive forces. So there's this less resistive forces, but you're just moving a tiny mass here and a tiny mass here. So it's a really small M you're moving, you know, with your really gigantic one. So they all just kind of go along. And then there's a point where they realize, hey, we're all in compression, you know, and they're going to push back against the pressure you're pushing in with. And it's not going to be free anymore. And that's when the spring starts to compress and get very stiff, because there's a point where that's it, where you've pushed the magnets close to each other and they want to rebound now. And so then you're going to have pressure going in the opposite direction. So you're going to have a pressure that starts to fight back against this. So as it moves further in, this pressure going this way gets stronger and stronger and stronger until those two pressures equalize. Then the pressure will get to this object. So this object really doesn't know anything's going on until these two pressures equalize. And once those pressures are equal, then it starts pushing this object. So it's compressed the spring, equalized the pressure of this to the pushback pressure of the spring, and now it's conveying that onto this. Now this isn't, you know, this is sort of an idealization that there's no pressure going in. Like when I push the magnets in, that somehow I don't feel any of the back pressure right away. Well, you do feel some of it, so this is definitely not going to be some perfectly linear line. But anyway, I'm just saying, for the sake of understanding it, you just have to understand that there's loose connections between the atoms, and you're really just pushing atoms, and you're just pushing these atoms here. You're not pushing all of these atoms yet. So the spring basically retards or slows down the transmission of this motion. So it's like this motion is going in, and the spring is creating a buffer, okay, that's collecting that motion. Then that motion gets to the object, and then the spring has this reservoir it can distribute both ways. And so that's why the spring can give it a plus velocity, velocity plus. So you'll hit the object, you'll start transferring your velocity, right? So when it's moving the spring, this one's losing a little bit of velocity. So by the time this velocity gets to this object, it's a little bit degraded because it used some energy to compress the spring. And now when this velocity gets to this, it's going to apportion a little bit less. And then you're relying on the spring to give it, you know, so it loses to, let's say, compressing the spring. But it's going to get that 2 back. And so that's sort of the part where you're just saying, okay, I lost a little energy compressing the spring, so I can only give this a smaller V. But when the spring uncompresses, it's going to give me that back. And what it's going to give me back is actually going to be more than I could have directly transferred. So the spring is going to make it possible to move this object a little faster, okay, than you would have been able to move it if you didn't have the spring. So by absorbing the energy in one form, then pushing, and then pushing again with the spring. So you push the spring, store the energy, then you move this object, your velocity, which is a little lower, but you move it your velocity, and then the spring gives you back what you stored, and the combination of those two will be a little more than you had originally. All right. And so the more springs you put in something, the more, you know, velocity you can transfer, a little extra. So if you made a Newton's cradle with a big object, so there is a video of this with pearls or something. And what you'll see is if, you know, you can swing in the big object, it hits, and then you have progressively smaller, and then the little bead at the end flies off at a very, you know, a very high velocity. Well, technically that couldn't happen if it was purely elastic. I mean, regularly elastic. And it's only because these objects have to have a little spring to them. That is, they have to be a little bit compressible and expandable. So each one will do this expansion, and each one will create a little bit of a dent in its surface, and then it'll expand back out. So it's going to absorb the energy, then push back, and then push back, and then push back. And so you're you're increasing how much velocity you can give the small object by putting storage in between all these objects. You're giving a little extra boost, and you'll see that in the outcome of the little object will actually fly away at a faster speed than this was moving. So you can have a velocity in and get a higher velocity out in a smaller object, and breaking the basic rule that, you know, the bowling ball can't hit a pin and make the pin go. If the bowling ball is going 10 miles an hour, it can't make the pin go 12 miles an hour unless there's some elasticness to store the energy and give it back again, give that extra boost. All right. So this isn't, like I said, it needs some work, but there's key points to understand is that, you know, that springs are storage devices, okay? So they're not going to destroy the energy. They're just going to allow you to convert it. So I've made this point before, but a spring doesn't care. You know, the spring is just saying there's a certain closeness. So these are just like magnets, all right? North-facing magnets that are going to repel each other would be the same idea as the spring. And you're just basically just saying, well, it doesn't matter how fast I go in. It just matters how close I am. It doesn't matter how, let's see how to say it. It's just about the position of the two magnets. You have had two magnets sitting here, and it just matters this distance tells you how much energy is in the magnets. Okay, so if I put the magnets really close to each other and they're repulsive, there's a lot of energy here. If they're further away, less energy, less. So it's just about the position. So it doesn't matter how fast I push the object into the position or how slowly I move it into the position. And so that's why springs are conversion devices. So you can push a high velocity into a spring and a low mass, and you can push out a high mass and a low mass and a high velocity. So you can convert theoretically, right? If we could make a spring flexible enough, you know, you shoot in a bullet. You know, if you could make a spring that was really long, okay, and so it didn't fracture. And it could just collect the energy and slowly absorb the energy of the bullet. You know, then you could put the stock of the gun on there and shoot it. I mean, it would be, you'd find out just what's equal to it. You know, that they have the same energy. You know, the gun barrel has the same energy. The grapefruit thrown out one side of the spaceship and the dime thrown out the other side going 1,000 times faster. Well, yeah, they have, you know, 1,000 times difference in the number of atoms. But anyways, I just mean that's kind of a key point to understand that these are conversion devices. You can take fast velocities in and produce slow, in, you know, mass to velocity ratios. You can change the, you can convert the energy into a different mass to velocity ratio. And levers do the same thing. And that's their function in the experiment. And I didn't really get to the reflection part, but I sort of explained it's sort of a tipping point when the energy will reflect versus, so if you transfer a lot of the energy, so you compress the spring, you're now transferring the energy to the other object, and if you transfer enough of it, that is, you're running out of it, okay, then the spring will push you in the opposite direction. All right. But if you're perfectly, if you have perfectly hard objects, you'll also get, you know, there's a video of somebody dropping a ball bearing on an anvil. All right, so it's a totally unmovable object. You drop a steel ball bearing, and it really does bounce right back to almost exactly the same position. It's so efficient that all the energy is rejected because the anvil won't yield at all. It won't deform, and it won't move. So it just gives it all back. All right, that's, like I said, this is a video that will need redoing for greater clarity. There's no point in me trying to emphasize the important points. I just have to do them as little pieces. I mean, the fact that springs are storage devices is an important bit. The fact that simple experiments, you know, the one mass and the one mass, and you combine them into a two mass and you destroy half the kinetic energy. It's kind of an obvious non-starter. none of the air track experiments are destroying anything called energy. So how do you account for your, you know, huge loss? You lost half the energy. And then I'll do the experiment with different masses and I'll conserve the energy. Why would I lose the energy merely because I connected two things? Yeah, doesn't make any sense. And it's half the energy. Again, it's not that it made a little sound. It's that it lost half the energy of the initial momentum. Yet you conserve the momentum. You still have the same momentum and you lost half the energy. It absolutely can't make any sense to somebody reasonable. You have to know that momentum makes sounds. That you have to use your momentum to make a sound. You have to use your momentum to make heat. So how can I 100% give away all the momentum, all the money, and yet still spend money? I can't do that. And all, you know, that argument I've been making for 2 years, and I don't... I'm sorry, it seems pathetic that I have to keep making these arguments when some of them are so good that you're just saying, how can you not get that? How can you not get that it's absolutely ludicrous to say, you know, I put $10,000 into the bank. You know, I exchanged my momentum. Put all my momentum into the bank. And yet I bought a new car. And I, you know, paid off my neighbor's debts. And I, whatever, bought a broom and swept the driveway. And I did all this other crap with the money. How can I do both? Obviously, you're going to say, oh, you could get a loan. No, whatever. Fuck you. It's just stupid. You can't 100% transfer the momentum and then say, I made a bunch of sounds and I deformed stuff and I made heat and I did this. You can't do all that crap. It makes absolutely zero sense. Everybody should be able to agree that can't make sense. I can't spend it twice. I can't, well, whatever. Can't happen. All right, and at any rate, this has been a draft, truly draft, physics video presentation. And we'll see. I'll keep endeavoring to persevere, but whew. this should not have been such a mountain to climb. I mean, all the bullshit in the human brain. I mean, it just, you know. This should be a tiny scare case. This the evolution of knowledge should be really an easy trip. And it's just because of bullshit that's turned into a chore. Anyway. Yeah, that's the end of the video. You can sort of see, it looks like an ending to me. I mean, it doesn't say the end, but, you know, there doesn't appear to be any, you know, non-recurring content here. So I think it's over. Yeah. Let it be done.